Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 482, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallich. I'm joined today by Eric Metzner from Nowhere Computer Repair. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
It's good to have you. So let's go ahead and start off a little bit for those that don't know you. Obviously, you've been in the community for a long time doing many different things, but why don't you give us your background of where you got started in computer repair?
Oh, goodness. I guess it all started probably 16, 17 years ago, probably around 99, 2000. I actually started doing graphic design with an advertising company. I would basically what they did was they did all kinds of promotional events and or they would sell coupon books to help nonprofit organizations, stuff like that. I was the guy that drew the ads by hand, would scan them in and then digitally clean everything up, and then they would go off to print. And since I was always at the computer, everyone in the office assumed, well, if something goes wrong with the computer, Eric's always there. He should know how to fix it. So I slowly started learning how to fix the office computers and eventually branched out into web design. And then somewhere probably around 2003, just started just fixing the darn things while I was in college and just kept doing it all through college and kept doing it beyond. And here we are today, I'm still fixing computers.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a great background there. So you got started in computers and just basically from graphic design. That's an amazing story. Because normally it's funny how when we work with computer programs, software, and other things, everybody all of a sudden thinks that we know everything there is to know about those computers.
Yeah, they do.
But that's, you know what? That's what makes us a commodity. So that's why people like us. So,
well, and that's a big thing too, is, you know, I mean, people ask us questions and sometimes it's programs we don't know, but it behooves us to know somewhere we can find those answers. Because at the end of the day, they're paying us for solutions, not necessarily if we're providing the solutions, but as long as their problem gets solved, they're happy and they're more than willing to shell out cash.
Exactly. So now talk about some of the other things. Obviously, you got started in computer repair and obviously you have a passion for it. Now, there's some other things in other communities, and you've written some blogs and different things that have gone around the community, correct?
I have.
So now, what got you interested in doing stuff like that?
Oh, I've always been into writing and, all through college, I actually wrote for one of the local, it was an alternative press type of, I guess you call them a zine these days, here in my hometown, and did that all through college. And even before then, I've always done a lot of writing, did essays, poetry when I was way younger. And heck, I was a musician for a long time as well, which I hear that's a passion we both share, isn't it?
No, actually, I mean, I wasn't so much a musician. I would, back in the day, I actually recorded for a band at one point in my younger years. And then growing up through junior high and high school, I was in many plays and musicals during my formative years, and also did a lot of lighting and sound for a lot of stage stuff. So I love the arts, and I wish I had more time to devote to stuff like that, but there's only so many hours in a day.
Right.
So now we were talking before the show, and maybe you can share with us, where did you come up with the name Nowhere Computer Repair?
Oh, goodness. When I decided to strike off on my own and start my own business almost 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago now, I wanted to do it right. I wanted to, because I've worked for a couple of other computer repair companies, you know, that lasted a year or 2 years. And basically doing that, I watched what not to do when running a business. And so wanting to do everything right, I did a lot of research on good names and colors and fonts and all kinds of stuff. And one of the big pieces of advice that I think I asked the question on Technibble, and someone said, find a name that rhymes. And everyone just started throwing out names. And I think one of the joke names that was thrown out, someone said something about something like wear and then repair, how it rhymed. And I kicked that around and came up with Nowhere Computer Repair and just ran with it.
Now, also before that, we were talking about where you're actually at. So why don't you tell the audience where you're actually at? And it kind of makes sense with the little background that you gave me on that.
I'm in I wouldn't say small town, a small city in Western Colorado, which basically, it's Grand Junction, and we're pretty much as far as you can get from Denver and still be in Colorado. We're, I think, 25 miles from the Utah border. We're not near, Denver's a 4-hour drive from here. So,
when you told me that story earlier, I was thinking, oh yeah, Nowhere Computer Repair makes, you know, in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly.
That's perfect.
So, and my clients love it. They get a kick out of the name, and that's the important thing. I mean, designing everything for the business, I'm trying to attract them. I'm not trying to attract me. So
exactly. So now, what types of things do you do? Now, are you an on-site tech? Do you work out of your home? Do you have a shop?
I have an office. It's centrally located, and we do a little bit of on-site stuff. I really don't like doing that anymore. I feel like I've paid my dues enough that I don't have to. So I have a contractor that does all my on-site stuff for me.
Okay. So do you actually have customers that come to the office?
Yes. I'd say 98% of my clientele come to the shop.
Okay. Now, do you have any, do you sell any retail there, or is it just strictly for computer repair?
That's where I differ from a lot of our colleagues in the community is in having an office, I don't retail anything. I keep some things on hand that customers might need, like hard drives, solid state drives, things of that nature, but I don't retail anything. I don't want to lock up the money in overhead, especially, say you buy a set of graphics cards. 6 months later, they're obsolete. The ones you didn't sell, now you're taking a loss on it. And that's just, I can order something and have it here in 2 days. So it's just much easier for me not to have to retail.
Yeah, I actually agree with you there, because I remember back in the day when I wanted to build my own machine. And if I wanted to go to a local computer shop, a lot of times the video cards that they had there were, they were kind of middle of the road. And even what they would call their best gaming video card really wasn't that great comparatively. And they were charging almost as much as I could go online for at the time and buy the best video card out there and be much happier that way. So retail to me is kind of funny when it comes to that stuff. And like you said, you get rid of the overhead and you're not holding on to stock that you might not be able to turn over.
Well, and with the online, you mentioned online, and that pretty much sums it up as well, is whatever we would buy and resell to the customer, it's almost impossible to compete with the prices of places like Amazon or Newegg.
Now, and the only caveat I will say to that, because I know there's some listeners out there that go, but, and I think about things like Best Buy. How many people go into a Best Buy and buy a $75 HDMI cable?
Right.
A lot, right? So some of those things I can see where you could probably make some money on, but again, is it going to be worth it to stock it and do it, or just basically fix computers and take care of people's problems?
Well, I'm not saying that it's not worth it to stock retail items or anything like that. That's really going to be a case by case basis, I think, for each individual business owner. And it's really your location is also going to play a large part on making that decision. I decided, though, between my competition and then the online aspect, that just for me, it wasn't worth it.
Okay.
And that's not a decision that I feel bad about at all. I'm actually happy about this is my fifth year in business, and it's worked for me thus far.
Nice. Very good. Yeah. As far as I'm like you, I keep a handful of hard drives, and that's about it. Everything else in today's day and age, you can really pretty much, I can order stuff from Amazon and almost 9 times out of 10, get it on my doorstep the very next day.
Oh, we're definitely.
So we're in a different age now. Actually, they are opening up in our area, probably less than 15 miles from me, an Amazon warehouse.
Nice.
So I have high hopes for that, because if it can come from my local area, it'll get here a whole lot quicker and you get it on your doorstep the next morning.
Or have a drone drop it on your door in a couple of hours.
Yeah, we'll see.
You got to be careful, though. You're a brave man bringing up the fact that I'm admitting that you order from Amazon, because I know in our community that's a huge contention point. I see a lot of the forums people saying, oh, Amazon, you need a proper distributor and this, that, and the other. And I'll say right now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with ordering from Amazon. If you have an Amazon business account, there's nothing wrong. If you're ordering one or two pieces here or there, because a lot of smaller businesses, yourself, myself included, we don't have the volume to order $10,000 worth of product from a distributor at a time. And you have to order like large amounts of product in order to get these decent discounts. So there's nothing wrong with, you know, utilizing Amazon or Newegg. Utilize the resources that you can for whatever size you are. There's no such thing as one size fits all in this business. And that's one thing that kind of drives me up a wall about some of the communities we all belong to.
Yeah, from that aspect too, people have said that before, and I keep asking the question over and over again, and we'll probably get some emails over this, but explain to me what the actual benefits are. And I've heard them all. Well, you can talk to basically a rep that's going to take care of you, and they're going to warranty the stuff, and all these little things that I go, well, yeah, okay, I don't have a rep, but it doesn't matter. I can type on my computer and go, yeah, this thing was bad. I need to send it back. Do you want us to send you another one, or do you want to send it back and get a full refund?
So, oh, goodness. There's an old saying. You asked about, you know, you mentioned that I've done a lot of writing, and, you know, literature has been a huge passion of mine. And one of my favorite sayings is a fellow Daniel Quinn says, there is no one right way to live.
Yes.
And I use that in business as well. There's no one right way to run a business. Everyone does whatever works for everyone. Is if it works for you, awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, if there was a way for me to use a distributor that made sense, because a lot of the distributors, you can get your one-off purchases and it's fine. But I look at things like, how fast can you get it here?
Right.
And so shipping costs, all these different things. You know, you've got a Prime account, you can get stuff in 2 days, or you pay a couple dollars extra and you get it in a day most of the time. So it's kind of like, meh, you know, it's quicker for me, it's quicker for my customers, and it's what works. But yeah, I like your philosophy. Basically, do what works for you. And I've been saying that for years now.
Speaking of which, are you still a member of the Excel spreadsheet club, Jeff?
Yes, I am. I'll be honest.
I'm a fellow member myself. So,
all right. it works for me. For my size business and for what I do, it works for me. And I basically took it was an original spreadsheet from the Technable Computer Business Kit. And that's where I started. And then what I did was I adapted it and made the fields to where I needed certain things to add up for my tax accountant. And so now at the bottom of my sheets every year, basically I have all the information for what I need to fill out my tax notes, send it to my accountant and go, hey, here's what came in. Here's the bills that were going out. Here's my costs and all this. Here's the parts I have, parts I bought, all that kind of stuff. Everything's right there. And so I don't really have to add it up or do anything over time. The only bad thing is, and it's like any other paperwork, though, I just have to make sure that I fill in all the blanks.
Yeah, I've been using a similar system for 5 years. I do a worksheet for every month. So it's separated by month, all the categories I need. It keeps a running profit and loss statement for me. The only time I've ever had a pain in the butt was last year. I accidentally, I was experimenting. I was trying to go all Linux at the office. So I was trying to use LibreOffice. Opened my spreadsheet in LibreOffice, saved it, closed it, whatever, when the experiment inevitably failed because Linux just wasn't quite ready for what I wanted it to do. I tried opening it back up, that spreadsheet back up in Excel, and my P&L was just gone. The formulas just were toasted.
Okay.
So I had to do a bunch of manual math last year, so I kind of learned a valuable lesson about that. But other than that, that's the only hang-up I've had using Excel.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. As far as I use what works, and again,
exactly,
that's what works for me. That's what works for you. So it's a perfect example, but you have piqued my interest a little bit. And I'm thinking now that I kind of like the way you're doing it month by month, instead of having a yearly run, which can tend to be quite long. So I actually might switch mine up. I do tiny adjustments every year and just make things a little bit better, maybe things I've learned to make it so it works for me. And that's something I might actually think about doing this year?
Yeah, if you'd like, I could send you a template of the blank one that I've been using.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'd really appreciate that.
Okay.
Very cool. All right. So what types of things do you do in your computer repair business?
Oh, goodness. Well, I guess I'll start with what I don't do.
Okay.
I don't do cell phone or tablet repair. I don't see any money in it. There's way too much competition for it. Your customers that want those repairs want them done fast. They want them done. And it's just, you'll spend all your time doing nothing but those kind of repairs on cheap devices that are hardly worth repairing in the first place for crabby people that are hardly worth dealing with in the first place. So I stick exclusively with computer and laptop repair. A majority of what I do is going to be security-based, which where the name Nowhere comes in. We do a lot of virus removal. I'm located 4 blocks from a university, so we see a lot of college kids that have mucked up their computers and need to get them fixed. Being 4 blocks from a university, though, I also do a lot of laptop screens as well. But virus removal, data recovery is another big thing that I do a lot of. Not so much. I used to, at the beginning, did a lot of custom gaming machine builds, but that has really tapered off over the years.
Okay. Now, I will say that, has nobody told you that computer repair is dying? And you can't survive on desktops and laptops?
You sound like Eli the computer guy.
Eric, didn't you know?
Right. Well, apparently no one told me or my accountant.
Right. Exactly. I believe, and I firmly believe this, you can look at any other industry and there is always work for us to do out there. And you can actually take what you like and do just that. To be honest, if I could build custom machines and make a living at that, that's probably something that's my most favorite thing to do. But knowing that I can also do virus removals, which is a fairly quick turnaround.
Oh, yeah.
You know, any of the other things that we do, screen replacements on a laptop, simple, easy. Now, I will say this, though. Are you dealing with any of the touchscreen laptops yet?
I am, and those are not so easy. A lot of the time, though, a lot of the repairers even recommend, or if you look at, like, say, iFixit, they recommend replacing the whole unit.
Okay.
And I don't like doing that. So what I've done is, since I don't like doing telephone or cell phone or tablet repair, I've partnered with a local cell phone repair shop where whenever I get someone wanting those repairs, I refer them out to this place. Whenever they get someone wanting computer, because they do just cell phone and tablets, they don't do computers. So whenever they get someone asking about the computers, they send them to me. And then when I get these kind of touchscreen repairs that I don't want to deal with, I actually farm it out to this cell phone repair shop. The guy charges me a paltry sum to do it for me, you know, like $20. And I'm not ashamed to say this, I charge my normal hourly rate to do it. So, nice. I mean, I'm a business, first and foremost, I'm a businessman. I've got I've got a family to feed.
Right.
And so we've made that kind of arrangement work for us though. I will say though, I don't get a lot of the touchscreen laptops in for repair. Because I've noticed that the touchscreen laptops that people bring in are usually those $200 or $300 machines that they got from Walmart.
Right.
And when they're quoted, you know, $190 or $220 to repair this screen, they're just going to go and replace the device. And that's all good and well. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and this is probably a pie in the sky dream, but I'm hoping that at some point these manufacturers will come up with a way where they can maybe put, instead of gluing the screen on, come up with some sort of bezel attachment that can actually hold the screen in place so that you can replace them when they are dropped, because they're always going to be dropped.
Just a week or two ago, I did a repair on an HP laptop that actually had that. It was 2 screws near the hinges at the bottom of the bezel. You pop it out and it clipped on with the plastic clips, just like a regular bezel does. And you pop it down and the screen, the LCD itself, was attached to the bezel, not to the frame or the back plate of the lid assembly. And so you pulled that down, and that was a super easy repair. And when I did that, I thought to myself, you know, I hope this is how they're going to continue to make these. This is nice. This is very repairable.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, because I think what they're going to do is, when somebody asks me about a laptop, I usually steer them away from the touchscreens because I go, here's the thing. if you break it, it's going to cost you a lot of money to fix it. And are you really touching your screen that much? Now, to be honest with you, I have a non-touchscreen laptop, and I can't tell you how many times I've reached out and tried to touch the screen to move something.
Well, here's a little food for thought. Everyone's talking about, you know, you see in the forums a lot, people talk about provide a premium service and you get to charge a premium fee. Let's look at the most premium company out there, Apple. Do they offer any touchscreens? No. And ask yourself why. And
there you go.
I think they're hedging their bets on the fact that touchscreen technology is just kind of a gimmick, a flash in the pan. And I'm hoping that it goes the same way. I'm probably wrong, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yep. You never know. But there are some things that it probably could be used for. But I guess what I would say is I would probably lean towards more of having it be on the tablet.
Right.
And even if it's a flip around tablet, because you're going to pay a little more premium for those. And maybe that's what people will use for drawing or stuff like that. But yeah, I just, in a whole lot of areas, I don't see a use case for it. Yeah. Would it be nice to flip through your pictures folder? Sure. Flip from one photo to another, because a lot of people are used to doing that on their phones. And so it would kind of correspond with that. But again, if you're a laptop, and you've got a keyboard and a mouse or a touchpad in front of you, are you really going to reach over and want to get dirty smudges all over your screen?
Exactly. And I think that could be why a lot of the pundits say computer repair is dead, because we're at a point now with the technology that it's no longer a one-size-fits-all solution. It used to be if grandma and grandpa wanted to check their email, tough luck, you need a computer. If little sister wants to play around on Facebook, tough luck, you need a computer. If the kids want to do their homework, tough luck, you need a computer. But now it's not an one-size-fits-all situation. Grandma and grandpa can get a tablet. Little sister can have the little Kindle that has the kid-proof case around it. So it's no longer a one-size-fits-all industry. So we're seeing less people needing a computer where they can use, you know, technologies like their tablets, their phones, or whatever. And I think that's why people say that it's dead. But try using your tablet, your phone, or even your cheap Walmart laptop to render a video. It's not going to happen. And so I don't think computer repair is going anywhere. It's just adjusting. And as technicians and business owners, it's up to us to adjust with the industry.
Yeah. And here's the other thing, too. Yes, a lot of people will get away with maybe what I look at those devices for, whether it's a phone or tablet, is basically it is for entertainment. You can watch videos on there. You can play these silly little games and do stuff like that. Now, really, I don't know when the last time anybody's used a phone and tried to actually type out an actual letter or a document
or a resume
or something that you have to. It would be nice to have a full size keyboard. And to be honest with you, Eric, I don't know how old you are, but I know as I get older, the bigger the screen I have in front of me, the better.
Oh, I'm going to be big 4-0 this year.
Okay.
So I feel you right there. The eyes just aren't what they used to be. I think all the years staring at a screen has kind of done them in a little bit. That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
There you go. And the other thing too, you look at things like printing. If you want to print from a phone or a tablet, good luck, because can you do it? Yes. Is it easy? No. And
not
is it ever going to be easy? I don't think so. Because none of these manufacturers can come together and come up with one way to print to any of these printers that are out there on the market, wireless or otherwise.
Exactly.
So, all right. So, I mean, it sounds like you do a lot of the stuff that what I would think a computer repair shop does. Now, do you have any types of recurring revenue or anything like that that you've done over time?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. And we just recently started getting into that. Over the last 2 years, I started offering doing managed antivirus and doing a little bit of light managed services. And I really hate using the terms managed services, because managed services means, and I've heard people talk on your podcast, and I agree, that you are managing every aspect of their IT infrastructure. And that's not what we do. We do maintenance plans, where a customer or a client can sign up. We do periodic maintenance. We take care of, you know, patch management, antivirus, even periodic tune-up, stuff of that nature. But we're not managing everything. So we're doing maintenance plans. We do residential, which is a market that a lot of our colleagues haven't gotten into, but I think it's a very lucrative market. And then small business and small office, home office. And that's where we focus on. I like to be able to sit down, you know, across from a table and see my clients, talk to my clients. And, you know, I mean, I guess we're still kind of a small community here where you reach across and shake someone's hand. It actually means something. And I like to do business like that. My clients like doing business with me like that.
Nice.
And it works perfectly well. I think our largest business clients maintain probably, I think, 8 workstations. We don't manage any servers at this point. So it's really light managed service, or if you will, RMSP, I guess mostly residential, small business. And it's a largely untapped market. And I get a lot of grief from our colleagues actually about doing that. Like, well, you have to deal with these crabby residential people. It's like, no, actually, it's a lot easier than going through a corporate structure, having to get 8 people to sign off to get one job done. It's a matter, again, no one right way to do business. It's what I found works for me, and I like that reoccurring revenue.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So for those out there that are not in the know, and I can't remember exactly when it started, but well over 15 years ago, here's a little secret. They had these types of maintenance plans way back then, people. Yeah.
Right.
We just now termed it MSP and all this stuff within the last few years because somebody wanted to sound smarter than they actually were. Sorry if that comes off a little rough, but that's just the way I feel about it. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it. No, you know what? Recurring revenue is an age-old idea, and it is a great idea to have that consistent revenue coming in. But also, if you look at it from a managed antivirus standpoint for your residential customers, it also keeps them protected. And here's what I tell my customers is, listen, you can have your computer. I can do a phenomenal cleanup on it. And about 3 months later, you're going to start to see little slowdowns depending on what you're doing, so on and so forth. And probably within about a year, nothing I've done wrong, but it's just the things you're downloading and adding to it. Those things will cause your computer to slow down because you're not careful what you do. You click yes on everything and you load all this stuff up. So a year from now, we'll go back and we'll clean it again. Or I said, if you want to have an experience like the day that you brought your computer home every day of the year, then you can pay a maintenance fee, which will do that. It's no different than an insurance or anything like that. We can take care of that on the fly, and you don't have to worry about it. And my customers are happy with it because guess what? 99.9% of the time, their computers work perfectly fine every once in a while, and you're going to get this no matter what software you're using. You'll have a little glitch or an update will mess up and you got to go in and take 5 to 10 minutes to fix it and you're on your way.
Exactly. It's about creating a seamless, trouble-free experience for the client. And I use a similar analogy with my customers. Only I use a automotive type of analogy. I tell them, look, you know, you buy a car, you have to take it in so often and get it tuned up. You have to have the oil changed, all this fun stuff. Now, what if instead, you know, you can pay a maintenance fee and that stuff's done without you even having to think about it? You don't even realize when it's being done. You're not taking time out of your day. You're not, you know, having any downtime with your car being in the shop. Now, that's what a maintenance plan does for you. And they all seem to understand that and they go for it. And that's the kind of service I try to provide for my client, my managed or maintenance plan, I guess, clients.
It's fine. You know, calling it managed services is one thing. It's when people tout themselves as managed service providers. I'm like, you're not an ISP.
Exactly. And it's a term, it gets thrown around so much. And I think someone needs to come up with a better term. Someone way more creative than I needs to come up with a better term.
I do maintenance plans. Let's just call it what it is. How about that? Let's keep the, you know, the yeah, whatever. Anyways.
Right.
Okay. So obviously you're doing the recurring revenue. You've got that going on. Are there other things that you've broke out into? Anything else? Backup plans or anything like that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think once you're an entrepreneur, you're always going to be looking for different things to do and different ways to make money. One of the things I'm working on is I recently, a few months back, farmed out my social media marketing to a friend of mine. And she's been doing it all for me. And I've seen a huge increase in revenue coming from Facebook marketing, for example. I've seen a lot more engagements. I've seen a lot more, you know, apparently who would have known that me as a computer tech and a business owner isn't that great at coming across like a regular Joe and getting people excited about what I do. I mean, but having someone that's been doing that for me has been increasing my revenue and increasing the reactions I'm getting. So we had actually sat down and talked about, and we're going to roll out a service offering this to other small businesses where we can do your social media marketing for you. And this is something we're hoping to beta at the beginning of May, offer it to a few, you know, few people, see how it goes. We're thinking do it on a week by week basis, no contract, nothing like that, nothing to lock people into, and total custom content. And so that's one thing that I'm looking at doing. Another thing I'm looking at is I'm wanting to, I don't know about you, but every now and again, you know, when someone's computer is completely hosed, they just say, here, recycle it. Or when a business upgrades their machines, they're like, here, just recycle all of these. And I was thinking it'd be great if there were a way to refurbish these computers and then get them in the hands of, say, children that couldn't afford to otherwise have a computer to use for their schoolwork or whatnot. So some other friends of mine and I are starting up a nonprofit organization. We're calling it Project Reboot, which is going to refurbish these computers and get them in the hands of kids that otherwise wouldn't be able to afford a computer so that they can do their homework and, you know, get a leg up on their education. And so that's another thing that I'm looking to do. And now that's definitely not going to make me any money or make me rich, but it's, you know, going to help the community. And that's a reward in and of itself.
Right. No, that's awesome. Yeah. Both those ideas are great. Yeah. As far as the social media marketing, this is one of the things that I've, as business owners, we have trouble because we can do everything, but we try to do everything and we don't have enough time to do everything. So
right.
Therefore, you actually, some of this stuff has to be hired out. And to me, social media, SEO, to be honest with you, it's a full-time job. And guess what? It's not my full-time job.
It can be.
It's got to be somebody else's full-time job.
Here's the funny thing is when I first handed all this over, my friend was telling me, you know, I've noticed your posts. You don't put anything like any quote unquote in the shop posts. There's absolutely nothing of you fixing stuff, of you talking to people, you doing anything. And I'm like, well, who wants a picture of my silly face doing stuff? And she told me, she's like, no, seriously, just do this and watch the reaction. I was like, okay. And so we started utilizing that and the reaction I've been getting more shares on the posts. I've been getting a lot more engagement. I've been getting messages from my customers or even potential customers saying, hey, you know, it looks like you enjoy what you're doing, or we like these posts, you know, that are informative. Keep them coming. And I was thoroughly shocked. I didn't think anyone would even care about that stuff, which is why for 5 years, I never posted any of that. I'm like, who cares? Who cares that I saw the world's dustiest computer in the world? I mean, I don't need to take a picture of that and post it, but apparently take a picture of it, post it. People love it.
Yep.
So, I mean, what the heck?
That's good. And not only that, you're getting that outside perspective, because sometimes when we're in the trenches, we're not really seeing what other people are seeing.
Exactly. We're unable to see the forest from the trees. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. So, all right. So, and what are you using for, cause I'll just ask the question, what are you using for a backup service right now, as far as for your customers?
Right now, I've been actually for the past few years reselling Backblaze.
Okay.
I really like Backblaze. They're affordable. I wish their, reseller program made me a little more money, but that's a good service. And I feel like I can stand behind it and in good conscience recommend it to my clients. That said, I really wish my RMM I've been using for my maintenance plans, for my residential maintenance plans, which is Kabuto, offered a managed backup solution. And rumor has it they're rolling one out soon, and I'm really chomping at the bit to see it. But until then, it's going to be Backblaze.
Okay. Yeah, Backblaze is one of those ones out there that I would trust with my data too. It's one of those things where you find one that works for you, and as long as it's been doing whatever you need it to do, you keep using that one. And it's one of those things where you eat your own dog food. So I use exactly. Carbonite, and that's what I sell to my customers, because I feel that if anything does go wrong, I can go to Carbonite and they can take care of it. And I feel it's affordable for what a lot of people need. And it's fairly simple to set up and use.
And that's exactly why I went with Backblaze. It's what I used myself. Yep. And I felt great recommending it to my customers.
And here's the thing. So you look at these services as an add-on. You're never going to get rich selling backup, but definitely, you will feel very good knowing that your customers that actually buy it, and you're only making pennies on the dollar, they actually are protected from any catastrophic things that might happen.
Well, and as I pointed out earlier, we're in the business of solving problems. And sometimes the solution to the problem isn't going to make us a lot of money. Sometimes the solution to the problem the customer has is a multi-tiered solution where they need something like managed antivirus or a backup or a quarterly or even monthly maintenance plan. Sometimes, you know, so it's all about the solutions. And if the solution, you can add these solutions together, then good for you.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, when I look at backup or look at what I feel is the best way to do things, for me, because I struggled with this, trying to figure out if I was going to feel comfortable selling any type of backup. Now I don't even sell the lowest tier backup. It's like, no, you're going to get a cloud backup and a local backup. And it's $99 a year. That's just the way it is, because I want you to be protected as possible by having it in three different places at one time. And that's really, that in my opinion, especially for residentials, is the only way to back up. So
that's definitely the way to do it. And that's actually, in my opinion, the proper way to sell it too. I see this amongst techs. I see a lot of techs as being very timid when it comes to communicating with the customers. They do the whole, well, you know, here's your three possibilities. Here's this one thing I can do for you for $50, and here's $100, and here's $100. But you choose own. Of course, every time the customer is going to choose the lowest tier.
Exactly.
But when you straight up realize, look, we're the experts. They're coming to us to get expert advice on the right thing for them. Tell them straight up, look, this is what you need. This is what it's going to cost. This is what it is, like it or not. And honestly, I have had no pushback. I've had no blowback from doing that ever. It's just a matter of getting out of your comfort zone a little and just not being so darn timid.
Right. I agree. Yep. And I think that's learned over time, because if you think about it in a win-win situation scenario where the customer is going to win because they're protected, you're going to win because you're making money, then everybody's happy, and it's okay exactly. to make money.
Exactly, exactly. And that's how I try to approach every one of my business relationships, is in a way that everybody wins, that they come out ahead and that their problem is solved, they're protected, they're backed up, they're, you know, not going to have any downtime or any frustration. I'm making money, I'm feeling good about helping someone else, and, you know, everybody wins that way. It's I don't know. Sometimes following these forums that we all belong to can be a little nerve-wracking, and it leaves me scratching my head and pulling out what hair I have left. But, you know,
Forums and Facebook groups, great places for information some of the time. Others.
Well, I've met some really awesome people through yes. there as well. Yeah. So I can't complain completely, but sometimes I feel like that old, that Captain Picard meme with the face just buried in the palm of my hands.
I know exactly which one you're talking about. Oh, so yeah, no, there, like I said, there it's any type of situation like that, you're going to have the good and the bad. And there are enough nuggets in there that are good that make it worthwhile. But sometimes I just wish people, if you didn't have an exact opinion about the question asked, just shut up and let somebody actually answer the question. But that's just me. So anyways, so now obviously I'm looking at your website now, and you also do Mac repair, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And what things do you, is there nothing that you won't touch? And the other question I have, and this is the problem I've always had, is parts are very hard to come by for Macs.
Parts for Macs can be a little more difficult to come by, but it's not extraordinarily difficult. The big thing I'm seeing, and what Mac repair does for me, is I'm one of only three people in my city that'll actually touch one to repair. And I believe metropolitan area, we're about 120,000 people here now.
Okay.
And being only three shops that'll actually touch the darn things, that's not bad.
Right.
What I see, though, I'm seeing more and more adware on Macs, more and more spyware, junkware. So I'm doing a lot more virus removals on these things. I do a lot of hard drive replacements and data recovery on them as well.
Okay.
So the parts that I'm usually having to come up with for all of them are hard drives, and those are easy to find. Now, some of the newer MacBooks that have that Lord only knows what the heck Apple calls that format. It's not M.2 SATA. It's something. Those can be a little bit difficult to source, especially when you have models that use a different format of SATA for each year in the model. That's just ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
That can be a pain in the behind.
But right.
Other than that, they're actually not that difficult to work. Heck, in some ways, they're easier to work on.
Gotcha. Yeah, because you're right from that aspect. A lot of the MacBooks and MacBook Pros, you basically flip them upside down and you can pull the back cover off and everything's right there. So it's nice to get to that stuff. Whereas you get some of these other plastic models from Dell, HP, whatever, and the next thing you know, you got to pull the whole motherboard out just to get to the hard drive because somebody thought it was a good idea to not put a door for the hard drive in there and actually bury it and connect it right to the front side of the motherboard, which makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, that one still drives me up the wall. I'm not going to mention any brand names. Excuse me. Oh, sorry about that. But
true. Oh man.
But yeah, you wonder how much they're paying some of these design engineers to make just to come up with this stuff, but then again, we're being paid hourly to replace that, so whatever.
That's the way I look at it. Now, I'm also looking on your website here, and it says you do training and lessons. What types of things do you do? Do you train?
For the training, and I have an intern that I have do all this stuff for me. It's mostly elderly clients that want to learn how to use Windows 10. They just can't figure out how to get around it. They want to learn how to use Outlook or how to use Word. And so a majority of it's with senior citizens, and it's just having someone that will sit down with you one-on-one and very patiently go over this stuff with you. That's something that I've seen a huge lack of in this industry as well, is people that are willing to patiently sit down and educate these people on a one-to-one basis. Now, I myself don't do that. Like I said, I have an intern that does this. He's a lot more patient with it than I am and probably explains it in a lot better fashion. I'd be like, oh, well, you just wanted to use this hotkey and this, that, and the other, and probably confuse the poor people. But what it does, though, is it helps him learn the process of computer repair. I have him in the shop doing some stuff with me, and then I send him out on these training calls. But also shows him how to run a business and all that, and it also delegates the task that I don't want to do away from myself. So another win-win.
There you go. Yeah, because even though I know people need to be trained, I would rather stick a fork in my eye than do that. So not that I don't like people, I do, and I love my customers. It's just to explain that stuff over and over and over again, I think you have to be a special type person, and there are those out there. So I like what
Definitely.
You do. Hire somebody else to do it and take care of that for you that's going to do a much probably better job.
And then that's just it. Like I said, he does a lot better job of explaining the stuff than I probably would.
Well, you just gotta. So now I'm looking also, and I've got a question about this computer recycling. What do you do to recycle your computers? Because the question I have is, or the reason I have that question is, I have a basement full of like 10 years worth of stuff that I need to get rid of, but I just haven't gotten to the point where I found a recycling facility that I can take that to and get rid of it.
Well, what I do is I have a company here in town that takes my recycling from me at no cost to me.
Okay.
And recycles them. They're making money off of it. Pennies per pound of this stuff, though. But it gets it out of my shop. It gets it because in Colorado, we have a law that you cannot put any electronics in the garbage. They passed that in 2012. So it's been that way for a few years now. So by offering the electronics recycling to my clients, I'm getting them in my door. I'm getting them, to recognize my business as the one place to get everything done from start to finish, from the beginning of the life of their computer all the way to the end of its life. And so it's basically just a value-added service for my clients. And all it is just, I've got a company that picks the stuff up, doesn't bill me for it. So one of the things, though, that I've been seeing, and that's where that whole Project Reboot recycling thing comes from, is, taking some of these machines that still work and refurbish these things and donate them, as opposed to, letting them just, be torn apart or scrapped or whatever.
Okay. And now, how did you find that recycling company?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm sure I had a number over the years of recycling companies approach me and to work similar deals. And this is probably the third or fourth one I've gone through since I've been in business. The other ones, you know, start up and then get bought out, or they move, or they go out of business or whatever. So it's really difficult to keep a decent electronics recycling company.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, definitely something I need to keep looking into, because
And if you're not that far from Detroit, I'm sure there's someone out there that's willing to do that. The big thing is you want to make sure it's a reputable company that is disposing of the electronics properly.
Correct.
That way you can just in good conscience tell your clients, yeah, the right thing is done with these when you after you drop them off. And now one thing I do provide data destruction. Like when they drop off drives, I do a DOD wipe on them. And I've had a few clients ask for, you know, certificates saying that we've done that, but not very often. But I just feel safer doing the wipe before I chuck those in the recycling bin, because I would hate it if some unscrupulous individual just grabbed those, did a quick data recovery, and was able to pull off one of my clients' data. That would just not be good.
Yeah, I'll do a wipe in DOD or not. One pass of it, basically zeros, will make that disk null and void. But the other thing I do is I actually physically destroy the drive itself. So that way there's no way. It's in a million pieces. If you really want to recover data from there, hey, go ahead.
Well, when I had more time, I used to take them apart and take the magnets out of them, because I was making a project where there was a backboard and I wanted to stick my tools to it with magnets behind the board itself. And so that was a little bit of fun. But
oh, nice.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore. Now, if the drive actually works, I just do three passes of zeros, put it in the bin, and off it goes.
Gotcha. All right. Very good. So now, are you recycling those, or are you actually using them for something?
Oh, those get recycled.
Okay.
I would not. That's the thing. I do not like used parts whatsoever. I do not like using those, especially for my clients, because there's absolutely zero way to warranty that kind of stuff. I do keep like old sticks of RAM and garbage, you know, old cables and stuff like that lying about, but drives, I couldn't do that. I've read too many horror stories about that stuff.
Yeah, drives have so much lifespan on them that and they're so cheap. You might as well just get a new drive, and you're not paying for it anyways. The customer's paying for it. Here's the cost of it. I'm not going to save you any money on this, because it just wouldn't be worth it in the long run. You're going to get a brand new drive that's under warranty, and if anything happens, it'll be taken care of. So
exactly.
I agree with that. And now
I use some of that stuff in-house, like for in-house projects.
Sure.
Like the office Linux workstation, or, you know, silly stuff like the machine that does nothing but runs Pandora all day, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. I'll use parts all day long, but nothing that would ever get passed off to the customer.
No. And a lot of people know that my data drive, I replace every year myself anyway. So not that I get rid of the drive, it just goes to another computer, but at least I know that I'm going to have less of a chance of a failure if I replace it, especially if you're backing up customer data and stuff like that. So,
right.
Now, as far as something I was thinking about the other day, when I actually back up, and I've heard people talk about this, they don't want to back up data on a bench machine because they don't want to be held liable. Now, I back up data on a machine and I move it to an external drive. So before I wipe the computer, I have it in two places at once. So if I do have a failure, at least I have their data backed up to where I can get to it.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with a little redundancy. It's one of those things that's better safe than sorry. I do something similar, and I wipe the drive. I do a pass of all zeros to it once a week.
The drive
I call it a bounce drive. I bounce the customer's data to it, and I do a zeros pass once a week on that, just to be safe.
That's a good idea.
You know, I've got cameras and alarms and all that stuff on my shop, but I hate it if someone broke in and stole, you know, that like all kinds of stuff on there. So I try to minimize the risk and liability.
Now, what are you using to write zeros to that?
I just use D-Ban.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, I know there's a lot of different programs and a lot of different tools and things that we use that actually have that built in there, whether you're using some sort of Linux distro or some of the tools we use for virus removal and whatnot. A lot of those tools will have that in there. I think I want to say Acronis has that ability. And actually, that's probably a very good idea. So that's a great tip right there. All right. So just looking at some of the other things. Now, as far as I'm looking at your small business solutions, so what types of things do you do for small businesses?
I mean, the big thing is the various maintenance plans for the small businesses. But with, what differentiates the small business maintenance plans with the residential user maintenance plans is going to be the fact that we actually come out to the business quarterly and go through, clean up the machines, do a walkthrough, make sure everything is the way it should be. And as I mentioned previously, my small business clients, on average, are 3 to 5 workstations. They're not very many. We have a lot of mom and pop type of shops that we support, and they actually like, and we like doing the personal touch of going out there and shaking hands and personally making sure everything is up and running. So not only do they get those maintenance plans, but they also get, we jokingly call it an outsourced IT department. That's there to prevent things from going wrong, or should anything go wrong, we're just a phone call away. And I found by doing those periodic walkthroughs like that, we minimize the number of emergency calls we actually get from these companies.
So you actually go, or either you or somebody else goes out on site to actually do this instead of doing it just remotely?
We do it remotely on a monthly basis as far as like doing the maintenance. But yeah, we do a quarterly pop in. Takes
nice.
Half an hour to an hour at most. And it adds a little bit of, you know, the client sees us, because the problem with maintenance plans is when everything goes well, they don't see us do anything. Right. So after a while, the client's like, well, why am I paying you? You're not doing anything.
Right.
So by doing those periodic pop-ins like that and going through and checking things out, they're seeing us work. They're seeing the value in our service. And that's why we do it. And plus, it also, again, gives us a way that we can visually inspect things, keep a good rapport going with that client. And it just adds value to the service.
Very nice. Now, do you mess around with things like servers at these small businesses, or they don't have a need for anything like that?
The small businesses we use, the biggest servers most of them have are going to be your NAS type of situation. Again, doing like 3 to 5 workstation type outfits, we don't see the servers anymore. And that kind of goes back to the whole fact that the days of the one-size-fits-all solution is done and gone. There's so much that these clients can do on the cloud now that removes the necessity of having a server on site. So We've seemed to have found a niche when our business clients with the smaller businesses, and we really like doing that. And I think, you know, it's an underutilized niche in our industry as well.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, there's a lot of things that that need to be taken care of that I think will need to be taken care of for a long time. And
oh yeah,
you've just got to carve yourself out what you're going to do and what's going to make sense for your business and make it work for you and your clients. So very good.
Definitely.
All right. So is there anything that, well, you know what, let's talk about one more thing before we go here. Let's talk about what are some of the tools that you use for your virus removals and maybe even remoting in.
For remote, I've been using Splashtop actually over the last year and a half. And what I like about it is I'm very distro agnostic. I use a Windows computer at home. I use a Mac at the office. I dabble in Linux here and there. And the reason being is I like to have an idea of what my clients are going through, regardless of what system they're using. And by using a Mac full-time in the office, it's actually kept me on top of my game when it comes to repairing those darn things. That being said, I needed a remote solution that I can run from my Mac and take over a Windows or Mac computer. And the best one I could find was Splashtop. And I've been very happy with them over the last year and a half. I've had absolutely zero complaints.
Very good. All right. And then go ahead.
Oh, sorry. As far as virus removals go, I will say I am a graduate of the Virus Doctor's virus remediation course. Took that a few years ago. So I use a lot of the techniques that he taught. But generally, really a virus removal, if it takes you more than an hour to do, including scan times, you're doing something wrong. They're really not that difficult anymore. I've been using for automation. I'm really fond of the Tech Suite by RepairTech. I like what they're doing. Years ago, I did like D7, but that seems to have kind of fallen by the wayside and hasn't been updated in a very, very long time.
You know, it's funny because I use all tools are good for certain things. And I actually use, I still use D7 too. I use the Tech Suite or Tech USB, or I can't remember what it's called now, but I use that for diagnostics. And not only that, going in there, but the new Tech Suite is just, it's phenomenal as far as getting it on the system and just running whatever you need to do. And the one nice thing I like about it too is they've got a deal with Instant House Call. So if you actually use Instant House Call and you have a you use Tech Suite, you can actually have Tech Suite load from inside Instant House Call and run on your customer system. Because the problem I had before was, even though they made the file so small, it still takes a while to transfer a file from your computer to a customer's computer. And I don't care what software you're using to remote in, they are all slow as far as I've seen.
Definitely. And that's going to be more your upload speed. That's going to be the bottleneck there.
Well, and here's the thing. I've got 20 up and it's still dog slow.
Oh, geez. We've only got 5 up here.
So
we got 60 down and 5 up.
Yeah, I've got 120 down and 20 up. So
I'm a little jealous.
Well, I'm sorry. So the speeds aren't really an issue, but it's just, I think just the transferring over the internet, you know, hopping from server to server and getting to the destination, it's probably not a clear cut way to do it. So the smaller the file, the better. But now that they've got that in there where you can basically load it up, it just launches and I can go in there and start a virus removal or a hardware diagnostic or whatever I need to do on that computer. So that makes
very
really
nice.
Yeah. The only other thing I started dabbling with a little bit was I did buy PC Doctor. And what I do like about that is with the UEFI BIOS that they have nowadays, this you can actually plug into a computer, start it up, press your F8, and you log right into that USB stick, no problem. And it'll launch your program and you can go and do your diagnostics. So
I was talking to the fellows at RepairTech not too long ago, and they had actually mentioned the rewrite of Tech USB is going to be completely UEFI compatible.
Yes.
So I'm really excited to see that.
Yep.
In the meantime, I've been using either Tech USB or I've still got a copy of Eurosoft's PC check that I bought forever ago that I used to do some hardware, mostly just for motherboard and processor diagnostics. But that a lot of cases requires you enabling legacy boot and all that fun stuff and disabling secure boot. And it can be a pain in the butt. So I'm excited to see what RepairTech does with Tech USB's UEFI compatibility when that comes out.
Absolutely. And I think they'll have something similar that's going to work in, because a lot of times right now I still use the OEM diagnostic program, which in a lot of cases it's actually PC Doctor and it's been used for, many years on a lot of these. So it does what I need it to do as far as it's going to check the hard drive. It's going to check the RAM. It's going to check the video card and all the things that might be causing a failure point. And then usually when there's something wrong, you get those wonderful beeps and all of a sudden, you know, hey, something's wrong. It stopped somewhere. Oh yeah, we need some RAM or whatever. So it makes it nice and easy. But I'm a big advocate of doing a diagnostic, even a lot of times before I actually boot into the operating system.
Oh, you are preaching to the choir there. Seriously. I have a sign right next to my workstation or my workbench that says always Diag.
Yep.
And the reason is it's a total CYA measure.
Yes.
Anytime, the first thing I do, any machine comes into the shop, before I even boot up the OS, I boot into the Eurosoft. I test the motherboard. I test the processor. I boot in to either or Tech USB, or I still like using Part of Magic as well.
Okay.
And I run the tests on the hard drive and the RAM, and it saves you so much trouble down the road because you can boot it up to the operating system. And be like, oh, this is obviously a virus. Repair the virus. Remove that. Fix it. Whatever. And they have a failing drive. That drive fails a week later or a month later. The customer is going to blame you.
Right.
You just had my computer. Oh, well, and then you test it again. Turns out it's the drive. Well, why didn't you see that? And someone said, oh, I can't remember. I think it was one of the Facebook groups. Someone mentioned, that prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. And I love that saying. And as a cover your butt measure, I diagnose everything.
Yes.
It only takes a few extra minutes, but it could save you a huge headache later.
Now, have you seen a lot of processors actually go bad?
Nothing that's found in the tests, no. I found when it comes to a processor, it's either going to work or it doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Motherboards, on the other hand, I have seen some go bad where if you run some of the tests, it'll say like the DMA controller's failing or something along those lines. But motherboards are largely also similar to processors. They either work or they don't. But a processor, though, if you get power and it doesn't post, it's either going to be your CPU or your motherboard. And, you know, it's a matter of running all kinds of tests and stuff then. But yeah, not often, though.
Okay. It's hard because I had a motherboard, my main system. It was an ASUS motherboard, and it went bad. And basically, it was hard to tell. I was having a problem with it probably for, I'd say, 6 months. But it was working well enough once it was booted in the operating system that it was fine. And I sent it back, and they sent me a refurbished board, which is fine. Chances are I probably won't use it because I ended up upgrading the board. But motherboards are hard to diagnose sometimes. And the processors I've seen over the years, I'll go to replace those. And it seems like I'm almost thinking that it's probably the motherboard almost every time, because it might be 6 months later and that person goes, it died again. And so maybe it wasn't the processor. Maybe it was the socket that the processor was plugged into, which ultimately is the motherboard. So those things are hard to diagnose. And that's what I was looking for, is something that would diagnose those a little bit better. But I don't know that there's anything that will handle all that out there.
Well, yeah, and processor failure is very few and far between. You don't see it very often unless there's, you know, a telltale sign, like something wrong with, say, the power supply, or like a surge has occurred, or heck, I've seen houses that were struck by lightning, and that definitely kills the CPU. But you don't see it very often. Usually if you get any of those real head scratchers, the place to look is usually going to be the motherboard.
Yep, exactly. All right, so Eric, is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to talk about while we end the show off?
Oh, goodness. Not that I can think of. I think we've been pretty thorough.
Well, I appreciate you coming out here and sharing with us, because I've learned a lot of new things today. So I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeff. I appreciate it as well.
And if people wanted to ask you a question or find out more about where you're at or where you write at, where would they go to do that?
Oh, easily. Definitely. If anyone has any questions or wants to chat or just, you know, cuss me out, I don't care. It's all good. they can find my website is nowhere.tech. That's nowhere.tech. There's a contact form on there, or you can just eric@nowhere.tech is my email address. I'm always happy to try to help or to chat or even argue if necessary.
Nice. Well, again, thank you very much. All right. You can find me on the Google+ at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you'd like to be a guest like Eric was, just send an email to guest@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the Tech-Enabled Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.